Okay, well, thank you everybody for joining us today for the very last CIDR presentation of the season. And before we get started, I just want to remind everyone that all the CIDR sessions are recorded and available from the CIDR website. So if you'd like to look back on those, or you know of someone who couldn't make it today and would like to listen to or watch the session, I'm going to post the link in the text box here, and maybe I won't. There it is. Sorry, I think it posted twice there. I'll fix that in a moment. You can use that to get to the recording, okay? Now I'd like to introduce today's presenters, Dr. Marty Cleveland Innes and Zara Akyol. Dr. Cleveland Innes is a faculty member in the Center for Distance Education at Athabasca University in Alberta, Canada. She teaches research methods and leadership in the graduate programs of this department. Dr. Cleveland Innes has received awards for her work on the student experience in online environments and held a major research grant through the Canadian Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. Her work is well published in academic journals in North America and Europe, and she has presented for us a few times here in CIDR. We're very happy to have her back again. Marty's current research interests are in the area of leadership in open and distance higher education, teaching across the disciplines in online higher education, and emotional presence, of course, in online communities of inquiry. Zara Akyol is a doctoral student in the Computer Education and Instructional Technology Department at the Middle East Technical University of Ankara, Turkey. Currently, she's a visiting student at the University of Calgary doing her doctoral research with Dr. Randy Garrison. Her dissertation topic is Development of Community of Inquiry in Online and Blended Learning Environments. Following Dr. Cleveland Innes' presentation of the research, there's going to be an opportunity for discussion, and then Zara will be using the application sharing feature in Illuminate to take us through the website that they've developed to support continued discussion and research on emotional and online learning. In order to use your audio during the discussions, just click on the microphone icon in the bottom left corner of the screen, and when you've finished talking, please click on the icon again to open it up for others. If you don't have audio capabilities today, you can use the text box at any time to post comments or questions. Now I'll turn the mic over to Dr. Cleveland Innes so that she can fill us in on her latest research into emotion in online learning environments.
Thanks very much, Lynn, for your kind introduction and the invitation to come back to CIDR again. I appreciate the opportunity to do this. I want to start by saying a special thank you to Zara, who's been instrumental in putting all of this together and very patient waiting for my work. So thanks, Zara, and welcome aboard. I'm always amazed when people show up from all over the place to work with us in CIDR, and I do appreciate your audience today. I hope that you'll find what we have to say interesting. We're certainly very fascinated by the things that we're finding. I've been a researcher, practitioner, and teacher in adult community and higher education for 28 years. I've been teaching at a distance for 12 years. Some of you have heard this story. A transition that I once thought was an accident, but now realize that it was some sort of destiny, as it turned out to be a perfect place for me to land. I've been asked to teach a course at the graduate level for the first time and said yes quite excitedly. I assumed it was face-to-face like my other teaching assignments and wasn't informed of the delivery until well into my preparation. I taught that first distance education course 12 years ago via audio conferencing with email support. And when they told me I was teaching by audio conference, I literally said, "What is that?" I had no idea. Well, I found the experience quite emotional. I was very scared and worried for most of those first 13 weeks. But I did roll up my sleeves, do my homework, and got heavily involved in the reading, in the observation, in the experimentation, and the work of teaching at a distance. It was definitely an emotional learning experience for me. and an emotional teaching experience. It was the first of many incidents that led to my current research program, one that includes not only a desire for improved online education, but a curious fascination as well. There are four of us heavily engaged in this project on the research team, and as Rick mentioned earlier, now we have a side group as well looking at emotional issues around mobile learning, particularly as it relates to nursing curriculum. So we're very excited about that. My main thrust in uncovering issues around emotion in teaching and learning, particularly online, has to do with the improvement of teaching. So again, while I find the topic itself very interesting and valuable, my main purpose in doing this kind of work is to add to our understanding of the art of teaching in online environments. So our presentation today is an overview of our most recent work in the area, and I do want to give you some background for those who haven't seen us talk about this before. And we will be, of course, linking this to teaching issues. Here very quickly is our agenda. I want to do some introduction for you on issues of emotion and learning. The literature is vast in this area. We'll go over the community of inquiry framework again for those who need a reminder and those who haven't seen it before. And we'll talk about where emotion fits into that online community of inquiry model. I will review for you the research that we've done to date on emotional issues online, and then we'll leave time for discussion. At the end, and perhaps most interestingly, Zara is going to show you the website that we've developed as a discussion place, a place to gather for those of us who have a special interest in this topic, where we can share resources and teach each other as we uncover the inner workings of emotions regarding teaching and learning in online environments. As I said, there is a vast literature around emotion and learning. We have, of course, with new technology and new ways to image brain activity, we have a much clearer view of what's going on cognitively and how emotion may play a role in that, in cognitive issues. This, the diagram in front of you is the attempt of researchers at MIT to begin to integrate the process of learning and the emotional response that is attached in the process. One of the things that I like about the work of these particular researchers, this is Kort, Riley, and Picard, and actually Rosalind Picard has done a number of things in this area. One of the things I like is that they remind us that the goal of understanding emotion around learning is to keep the students going, is to understand more fully the student experience of learning, and by being aware and cognizant and informed about the emotional response as it relates to learning, teachers then have another lever to pull, I will say, to manage those emotions. And I want to be very careful here to suggest I'm not talking in any way that we act as counselor or even worse, I believe, that we try to foster one particular emotion over another in order to enhance the learning environment, but rather to be open and aware of what emotional response may be elicited in an individual student as they go through the learning process. Here's what these researchers say. The goal is to keep the student's exploration going by watching and responding to aspects of the affective state of the child. And I would, of course, change that to adult, by occasionally prompting with questions or giving feedback, well-timed questions and feedback, and watching especially for signs of frustration and boredom that may precede quitting or giving up or loss of engagement. For signs of curiosity and interest that lead to active exploration, and for signs of enjoyment, mastery, puzzlement that might indicate a successful learning experience. Now you can see in this diagram they have cross-referenced constructivist learning where building a schema is going on with something that they refer to as unlearning. I would be comfortable if they put non-learning there, but they're also talking about being in a state where you're actually losing ground in terms of learning. They divide into negative and positive affect, but I want to make the point here that Plutchik, P-L-U-T-C-H-I-K, is the grandfather of human emotions, and his theory is there are no negative or positive emotions, that each can have an outcome that is healthy and constructive for the individual. What these particular researchers are talking about, of course, are things that are pleasure and pain, the two sides, and they suggest that negative affect can be problematic. Although not everyone agrees with that, I think it is important to consider that as a teacher, we may want to have strategies in place that diffuse or redirect energy when you have a student that's experiencing negative emotion, just like you would, you know, a friend or a child and so on, and that positive emotions be built on. That would be the position this particular group is taking. I knew in becoming a distance education teacher that projecting myself as a real and whole person was central to creating an engaging learning environment for my students. And I have come to realize that that also means demonstrating the emotional side of who I am. This is pretty scary for someone with Southern European heritage, right? I'm Italian, and that means my temperament tends to be highly emotional. So clearly there is a role for that. It that plays a role in my life, plays a role in my teaching, and so on. Taking that, however, and doing something with it has to be done in line with what I refer to as the first principles regarding the art of teaching. And when I started to think all of this through, one of the first things I went back to was something Shule said. This is, you know, the mid-1980s when I was studying adult and higher education. Because Shule's point is a critical one. What he says is that our central task as a teacher is to ensure that we are getting the students to do the right things. So as I look at emotion in teaching and learning, I need to be very careful that as I present myself as a whole and real person, my presentation of that emotion needs to be done so in a way that will move my students to engage appropriately. And that particular pathway has to be considered. This isn't just about sort of, you know, presenting yourself without consideration to how the students might respond or what the benefit would be in so doing, but rather to remember this fundamental task, and that is that whatever you are doing as a teacher has to be done in such a way that it leads to what we hope are effective engagements and activities on the part of the students. Very quickly here, I want to go over a couple more of these, what I sort of call first principles in working with students, and I'm going to leave them for you to review at a later time, but these are things that we all know about, engagement, student-centeredness, interaction. And as we integrate and emotion into our teaching, and as we consider the emotional tenor of the students, these things have to be upfront and center as well. This is all quite complex, and I was very struck as I moved into distance and then online environments that my repertoire as a teacher had to expand. And this took me back to the concept of bricoleur. A bricoleur is one who creates from a diverse range of materials and tools which happen to be available. So there is a bricoleur is an artisan, a creator, and that particular person does what it is they have to do by making the best use of what's available to them. A teacher as a bricoleur, this is a definition from Nonan, N-O-N-A-N. A teacher as a bricoleur is described as someone who makes a series of professional judgments about how to teach. Well, that led me to a definition of an online teacher who now, in comparison to other mediums that we've had to date, has far more materials and tools to work with. And so we as online teachers can become bricoleurs by making a series of professional judgments about how to teach using the diverse range of materials and tools available. And I submit that the emotional tenor of our students and our own emotional presence, I'm going to say very loosely, is one of those tools. There are some references here for you, and I didn't provide a bibliography, although there will be bibliographies available on the website and articles and so on. But here are the premises that we take from the literature and our own research that validates and is foundational to the work that we're doing. We know from a vast literature, decades, an increasing amount of knowledge that is getting more and more granular, highly technical, that emotion is present in the human experience, that we need to observe it, acknowledge it, and support it. We also know from, there are two sort of seminal researchers in this area. They're both neuroscientists and actually began their work simultaneously, not realizing that the other was doing the same kind of thing. They were working in different environments but came to the same conclusion. And they provide compelling evidence that emotion plays a very clear role in human reason. So this idea of the dispassionate thinker, the cool-headed intellectual, is actually a misnomer. That while we may not be expressing emotion publicly or in a way that's salient or clear, it is going on cognitively. And then finally, some others who are writing, Brookfield and Littman, who make it clear in their theorizing that emotion cannot be considered separate from learning environments. Well, time marches on for all of us, and about the time that I reached full onlineness, the term that our Judith Hughes, I think, coined a couple of years ago, Randy Garrison, Terry Anderson, and Walter Archer were creating the community of inquiry model to guide our thinking about the experience of teaching and learning online. The model views community as something that emerges in support of online learning. And it emerges in the relationship between three elements: social presence, teaching presence, and cognitive presence. Social presence is defined as the degree to which learners feel socially and emotionally connected with others in an online environment. Cognitive presence describes the extent to which learners are able to construct and confirm meaning through sustained reflection and discourse. The central organizing element of teaching presence, the design, facilitation, and most importantly, the direction of cognitive and social processes for the realization of personally meaningful and educationally worthwhile learning outcomes. Well, this particular model is full of the first principles, which I've already talked about. And in addition to that, the model is also grounded in the work of Litman and Dewey. And as I got more involved in this, one of the greatest benefits for me in engaging with the community of inquiry model was reading the background material. Who wouldn't learn things from Dewey, but Litman also was very insightful, and I want to quote for you some of the things that Litman has said. We have to give Litman credit for the initial conceptualization of a community of inquiry, but he wasn't working online, of course. And an Australian scholar, Sarah Dave, talks about Litman this way. The guiding principle of Litman's community of inquiry process is letting the argument lead. Although the facilitator of the inquiry has a responsibility to guide the discussions procedurally, this is at the level of co-inquirer, and he or she should not lead the inquiry down a predetermined path. It is a process of letting the dialogue unfold through the participants' own contributions. This leads to engagement, a term that you heard me use a few minutes ago. This engagement, according to Litman, is critical, creative, and caring. Letting the argument lead is a process of engaging the three criteria. By caring for the process, they do, in fact, become critical and creative. That for me, and learning that, thinking about it, has been central to my understanding and use of this particular model. Just to give you some of the granularity, some of the components that exist within this model, social presence, cognitive presence, and teaching presence are further broken down into sub-elements. They're listed here for you. And these have been very important to the continued explication and validation of the model. There are indicators listed here on the slide. These indicators come from the conceptualization and the instrumentation that a group of us have done on this model over the last year, year and a half. We now have a measurement tool that's been validated in a multi-institutional sample that allows us to measure the level of teaching social and cognitive presence among the students, and more recently, now we're just beginning to test it with instructors as well. When I started to look more seriously at issues of emotion in online environments, I went back to some of the things that were seminal to the community of inquiry model. This is a quote from Litman, and he says very clearly that a community of inquiry model is thoroughly social and communal. It is a method for integrating the emotive experience, mental acts, thinking skills, etc. So while Litman does not go on to say much more about what you do with this emotion, how do you integrate it, what can teachers do, what role does it play in the model, he does foreshadow this issue for us. And here's a quote from our esteemed creators of the model. And they are defining social presence, which is where you will find reference to emotion in the online community of inquiry model. They say social presence is defined as the ability of participants in a community of inquiry to project themselves socially and emotionally as real people through the medium of communication being used. So, those authors as well have not ignored the reality of the emotional side of the human experience. What we kept digging for, however, is some answers to which emotions, under what conditions, and so what? What do we do with these? And in fact, I had a graduate student that, again, I need to pay tribute to. Her name is Priska Campbell, who came to me and said, I think emotion is in the wrong place in the model. And she did her master's thesis on to discover whether, in fact, emotion played as significant a role in cognitive and teaching presence as it does in social presence. And we drew some interesting tentative conclusions that, in fact, that is the case. Here's some work that Liam Rourke and Terry Anderson did a few years ago. And I found the question of how emotional is the social. I thought it was interesting to find that they uncovered 7 out of the 15 social indicators that were most significant in the presentation of oneself as a social being. And here are the 7 that are most salient. And of these 7, 4 of them relate to some sort of emotional state. This again was something that emerged as we were digging through and trying to determine how much emotion, what kind, and so on. So we landed here a couple of years ago, and there's a lot of support in the literature for this, and that we feel very comfortable in concluding that emotion is present in online learning communities, and now it is our job to identify, again, which emotions, under what conditions, and what does that mean for us? What shall we do? We have a considerable data set, 240 students who engaged with us over a 2-year period in about 30 different courses. And those students did pre and post questionnaires for us. They did an earlier version of the measurement instrument to validate the community of inquiry, and we have transcripts on all of those students. So if you're sitting in the room with Marguerite Kuhl, you probably see her face turning a little white now because she was one of the research assistants involved in we rolled up our sleeves and messed around in this data for a very long time. And when we began looking at emotions, we went back into that data set and looked for the expression of emotion. We looked not only in the stories that students were telling us about coming online and becoming online learners, but we also looked for it within the transcripts and the conferences themselves. And here's the laundry list that was created by this esteemed group of researchers and research assistants. What we found was, in fact, that if we hold this list of emotions up against what Plutchik says are the most common human emotions, that they are within about 85% of his list. So that means that some emotions, at least for this particular sample, are not yet presenting themselves. Suzanne asked, what about anger? And it may come, yes, it may come under this, but that's a very good question. And we do have to ask ourselves, is anger an appropriate place for, is anger appropriate to be presented in an online environment? I don't have an answer to that. I'm just suggesting it. And under what conditions would a student show anger? And what would that do to the teaching environment? So that's a very good question. When we were validating the instrument and measuring social teaching and cognitive presence, we had 34 items to measure the first 3 elements. And at the second phase of that validation, we added 6 more elements that referred to emotion. Now, after many discussions and debates and head scratching and okay, some serious wine drinking, we decided that rather than see emotion as a separate presence, what was more likely is that emotion was a component within the other presences. So we identified the following 6 items as indicators of emotion. Emotion was expressed when connecting with other students. I felt comfortable expressing emotion through the online environment. Those are social presence items. Expressing emotion in relation to expressing ideas was acceptable in this course. I found myself responding emotionally to ideas and learning activities in this course. The instructor acknowledged emotions expressed by the students, and the instructor demonstrated emotion in presentations and or discussions. Now, I do, of course, you know, curiosity killed the cat, and is also something that I've been blessed with. So I did look to see if these particular items would cluster together as separate items. And in the sample that we were using to test this, they did not. They did not cluster together as a separate factor. They did, however, as we predicted that they would, load with the other presences. They didn't load exactly as we predicted, but they did load with the other presences. Social presence was no issue. The two that we projected to be part of social presence loaded with all the other social presence items. And our alpha reliability changed by a few points. I think we went from 83% reliability to 85% on the social presence items. Teaching presence and cognitive presence was a little different. We expected the two that are in greenish blue here to load with cognitive presence and the gray to load with teaching presence. But in fact, the item, I found myself responding emotionally about ideas and learning activities in this course, loaded with teaching presence. I have some hunches about why that may have occurred. But in the interest of time, I'm not going to belabor this. I will, but I'll be anxious to hear what you think when we start our discussion here in a couple of minutes. This is the graphic that we are currently working with to suggest where emotion may be presenting itself in the community of inquiry. I can think of some other sort of three-dimensional, multi-dimensional representations that would be more interesting than that. In fact, I see emotional presence as not only foundational, but a conclusion to the learning experience. So I would almost see it as the bread in the sandwich, if you will, being on either side of the experience of being in a community of inquiry. I just want to quickly go over these last few slides. This particular person, Fielding, is actually a learning space designer. And he says something that I think is really important for you to know. Because he knows that when we get emotional about a task that we're in, about a task we are involved in learning. Research has confirmed that emotions are linked to learning by assisting us in the recall of memories that are stored in the nervous system. Practically speaking, this means as designers and educators, we need to create places that are not only safe to learn, but also spark some emotional interest through celebrations and rituals. That's his particular version of what we would do to spark emotion. Again, I'm a little uncomfortable with that idea. But he opens us up to the possibility that we may, in fact, want to make our online environments more emotional places. Imagine that. I want to give tribute to two wonderful, talented, clever researchers who work in our Center for Nursing and Health Studies at Athabasca. And they did a very interesting study on exemplary educators in online environments. If you haven't seen it, I urge you to take a look at it. They're writing about the community of inquiry model, and they say it does allude to some aspects of instructor humanness, especially in the social presence component, but perhaps there is room in the model for a more specific emphasis on the emotional presence. How can one have a true community without some aspect of emotional attachment or involvement in the lives of who share that communal space? We are at the moment just finishing the data collection with a multi-institutional sample of instructors. We asked instructors both to use our measurement instrument for the community of inquiry and also interviewed these particular people. And we have, again, sort of reams of data on this, but we pulled out a few conclusions that we got from the data. We have data on 40 instructors at the moment. Regarding affect, instructors feel comfortable expressing positive emotion online. Most would endeavor to avoid expressing negative emotions. And I did notice Terry asking the question, can emotion impede learning? And I think we should discuss that. I think that that's the general feeling. That has been the general sense for a very long time, that in fact some emotion may interfere with cognitive processing. But new imaging and new theory suggests that it would only be at the very ends of the spectrum that that would occur. The instructors feel that emotion can both support and hinder learning, e.g. anxiety, frustration can hinder the experience, therefore making learning more difficult, and excitement and satisfaction can enhance. There is a significant difference in some of the groups within the sample. We have some Spanish instructors who are involved in our group and instructors from Athabasca University. And those trained as dispassionate observers, so we would consider this among the scientists, the mathematicians, and so on, are much more likely to attend to EP. So again, we have some disciplinary differences at work here. I'm going to just hold this. I'm going to hold this slide until the end and turn it over for some discussion, so that we have a chance to do that. And I want to make sure we have time for Zara to show you all the website. So I'm going to turn my mic off, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, Rick will jump in here. Not to dominate things, but and Marty, we'll talk more about this, obviously, and I'm sure. You know, as you were talking about motivation or the expression of emotions, both negative and positive, or however we want to put it, I can't help thinking about the issue of motivation and how that factors in. So I was kind of surprised at the lack of loading with cognitive presence, as I kept thinking about the concept of Bandura's idea of self-efficacy, and maybe that could be simply translated as self-confidence, and whether or not that, if it isn't an emotion in and of itself, gets expressed in terms of emotions, or that emotion plays a large part in that. So I wondered, or is that just opening up a huge new can of worms that just further complicates the situation? What do you think?
Well, I would love to hear from the group, but certainly from my reading of the literature, Rick, I would say that self-confidence and self-efficacy and even things as slippery as motivation, which is just so highly complex, that those are antecedents to emotional presence, that you have particular levels of motivation, a certain self-confidence, and so on. And those are pre-indicators to how what your emotional response may be.
Or for that matter, perhaps there are even causal factors. So I guess if I could put it that way, maybe I'm saying the same thing over.
There was a lot of texting and comments going on back and forth here over the last few minutes, and I'm trying to go back and pick out some points or questions that were made, but there was so much. So please take a moment to grab the microphone and express any questions that you had throughout the last bit of the presentation.
What kinds of activities, it's Arlene O'Leary, what kinds of activities have you engaged in your online classes that have produced some of these emotional responses that can then be connected to your original statement about outcomes?
Well, you said the word that, of course, is... someone on my research team calls it the holy grail in what it is we're trying to uncover in online learning. It is, in the end, the outcomes for individual learners that we want to foster. And there, of course, are many discussions about whether those should be our outcomes, their outcomes, or some combination of both, and so on. That, too, is very discipline specific. The nursing faculty, I know, is very clear about what their outcomes are. As someone that is a consumer of nursing care, I'm really pleased that certain outcomes have to be realized. There is a lot of information in the literature about how one might use emotion to foster particular engagement. So at this point, I think we are more likely to talk about emotion working toward intermediating factors that we know to be important in the realization of outcomes. We have decades of wonderful data that has measured every possible outcome available in higher education around interaction. Faculty-student interaction, student-student interaction, formal and informal, academic and social. And we know that interaction plays a role in the realization of every outcome you could look at, values, content, student satisfaction, and so on. So if we roll it back a bit and say, all right, then what can we do with emotion to foster more interaction? I think we have some good data, and it is from that position that I act. What you asked me sort of for tips and techniques on what I do, and I'm afraid for the time that would eat up. But if you want to contact me afterwards or join us on the website, we will begin to talk about those things. And in fact, we have some more research that's just in the preliminary stages to look at some of those things as well. It's a very good question. What will we do in order to use emotional tenor and teaching practices in order to work toward more salient outcomes?
Thank you.
I'm going to invite Suzanne to grab the microphone here if she has audio, because I was just skimming through the text messages, and Suzanne, I saw you had lots of comments and questions, and I just can't possibly address all of them here. So do you want to just grab the audio and let us know what hasn't been addressed so far?
Maybe while Suzanne's looking at what she wrote in the past, I can ask her to maybe clarify what you meant. You said, do you have a hard time getting faculty buy-in for this? And I'm not a faculty developer, so I'm not in a position where I have to convince faculty that this is a good thing. I do think that for those faculty who say, just the facts, please, or show me what this would do for my teaching, we do have enough evidence now to say using and understanding emotional response can be of value in a learning environment. So if they want just the facts, there's some really good data, especially around neuroscience, about how emotion plays a role, certainly in cognition and most likely in learning.
This is Kathy Gray. Can you hear me? I'm not sure if I'm coming through. I can't actually hear myself, except in the room. Tarumi, we're just talking about gender and emotions online, and I really appreciate your question of bringing up the gender differences, Terry. I think it is crucial to look at gender difference in emotion online, and I'm wondering if the research did any of that. Thanks.
There is data from two different perspectives that we can bring to bear on this particular issue. One is from neuroscience that identifies that, I'm not going to remember the segment of the brain where this occurs, but it is the piece that goes through the center of the brain, links the two sides together. There is some pretty clear evidence that the emotional response center in the male brain is less active than the one in the female brain. Less active. Now that means, of course, there's a normal curve in all of this, and some males will have higher emotional responses than others. We have tremendous sociological data that identifies how much the expression of emotion is culturally bound. And if you've done any traveling in Europe, in particularly Southern European countries, you will see a much different tenor, a different repertoire of behavior for men in the expression of emotion. And I can, just to give you a very personal anecdote, having traveled around there for a month this year with my family, that includes my 13-year-old son, he was very aware of this expression of emotion and said, "Oh my gosh, everybody kisses everybody over here." So there are some differences. They are not strictly gender differences. And we need to be aware of these sort of cultural differences. For me, that does not take away from the attempting to uncover what instructors and designers need to do to address emotion and perhaps even make use of emotion in online environments.
If there's no more questions or comments at this point in time, I think it might be a good time to give Zara an opportunity to show everybody the website and do the application sharing. Is that okay with you, Marty and Zara?
Hello again. I'm going to use the application sharing tool to introduce the website, but the address of the website is this, so you can also explore by yourselves. This is the main entrance of the website. The main purpose of the Emotional Presence website is to provide a context for everyone who are interested in the topic to discuss and explore the issues about the role and meaning of emotional presence in online and blended learning environments. So now you can log in as a guest. But for future use, you should register. After you access, you will see the other courses. Actually, the Emotional Presence website is a course designed and developed under Moodle. So it's very easy to navigate. We have allowed guest access for now, but as I said, you need to register for later access. So this is the main page of the website. So we have some... Sorry, I didn't start the application sharing. I am going to start again. Sorry for the problem. So this is the main entrance. I'm logging as a guest now. So these are the other courses as well. This is the main page of the Emotional Presence website. We have some prior question to explore collaboratively. So for registering, after you register, a confirmation email will be sent to your email accounts. And then to log in the website, you need to enter the enrollment key. And I'm typing the enrollment key now. You need this key to register the website. We have three forms in the website, the needs forum, the social forum, and the emotional presence discussion forum. For the needs forum, I post a message about the upcoming conferences now, but you can always share events and conferences about the emotional presence or the online learning or blended learning environments. For the social forum, it's more for introducing ourselves. So you can post an introductory message about yourself, your interest, and your interest in the topic, and your educational background, etc. And this is the main forum. And we will use the transcripts for research purposes. So we got the ethical approval for this one. So sorry. And we have also some resources. We have articles and presentations. You're always welcome to put other resources and presentations about the emotional presence. Because of the copyright issues, we just put the references and the abstracts of the articles. You can add more. And we have other resources and links. You can see the, I see someone already registered. And you can see the other participants in the website. So that's all for now. If you have any questions, I can reply.
Rick and here, Sarah, in terms of putting articles up, we're actually just discussing this with Carolyn, who's also on here, about our mLearning research site. And I noticed that under the articles, you've just listed them. Is there any reason why you aren't able to put a links or the attachments to the other articles up? It's a bit of a pain to do it in Moodle through putting individual articles up as links to files, but it could be done through discussion forum fairly easily, which is what we're going to do. Comments?
Rick, anything that's open source, we can, of course, provide links to or put up onto the site. If the articles that we wanted to put up, some had copyright issues, some did not. So at this point, we've chosen just to put the abstracts up and let people look for them. But certainly, we are looking for ways to expand that and things that we come across that are already open source, already on the web, and so on. They will be available through links and so on.
Are there any other questions at this point? If so, you can text it in or use the microphone.
Well, I'm afraid that I've either bamboozled you all or put you all to sleep. I'm not sure which. Can I just finish by saying a couple of things? If you have questions, please jump in. I would love to hear more from you. Sarah, perhaps I could get you to turn off the application share. I just want to go to these last couple of slides that I have. I am, of course, currently writing about this, and here is a quote from something I've just finished. And again, I want to reemphasize that while the topic is extremely interesting and there are many issues, such as the ones that you've all brought up, what about anger? What about gender differences? How do we deal with cultural issues? I notice there's someone here from a Japanese background. And so we want to continue that discussion. At the end of the day, all of this is very much about continuing our quest for the highest quality online learning. And because a lot of the work that I do is about instruction and the art of teaching, I am talking most specifically about that. And I've said instructors can model emotional response, explain its role in their own learning, teach how to bring emotion to consciousness, and make use of emotional states in a learning situation. And those, for the wonderful person that asked me about the tips and techniques, these are the things that I have been able to pull from other people who are writing about it, and again from my own experience. And I do invite you to come and join us in the forum. I will be on daily to make sure that people who are coming on to present themselves or share ideas and resources will be acknowledged and engaged. And we are not only looking to increase our own learning about this, but to engage people in the research that we're doing if you are interested in doing research in this area.
Well, we're at the end of our time allotment here, and I want to thank you, Marty, for joining us once again and providing us with a very interesting presentation. And Sarah, thank you very much for giving your time and sharing your research with us today and your work on the website. We always appreciate your presence here and the fact that you're keeping emotion in online learning at the forefront for all of us, and drawing our attention to it is just wonderful. Thank you, Marty, for that. I want to remind everyone before we leave that in the fall, the Cider sessions will be switching to Wednesday mornings and will be taking place once a month, and we'll be alternating with CNIE, who will be having presentations on the third Wednesdays of the month. I will be posting a new schedule and sending out invitations to the first presentation as soon as that's available. Hopefully everybody, you will have a happy and safe summer holiday, and we'll see you again in the fall.
Arlene, don't forget to send me a note. I'd like to talk to you some more. Thanks, everyone.